Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, Danny Strable. He's the CEO of Rackhouse Whiskey Club. I'm going to keep it brief because we talked a long time and there's so much good stuff in it. Some of it's about whiskey. Some of it's about life. Some of it's a decision-making entrepreneur. There's just so much stuff. And I'll give you this. Here's the takeaway that I thought was worth noting. First off, kudos to all the warriors out there, all the veterans. He's partnered with tons of veterans in this. And I don't mean to like, I know that this is a slippery slope with the conversation around, you know, alcohol and fun and you know, veterans and people who have recovery issues and things, but there is not a group out there who knows their whiskey better than veterans. Those dudes, if you have ever had the opportunity to drink with Navy SEAL, which I have had that opportunity, it is no joke. And I think it's just one of those things. There's something about whiskey. If you go back to the beginning of America, the USA, whiskey has played a pivotal role, and there's a story to be told and a character to be named at every single major U.S. historical event ever. And I just think it's—I don't think it's a coincidence. And I think the people, including Danny, that I meet from the alcohol and whiskey circles, and a shout out to our friends at Weinster, also not whiskey, obviously, but very similar. Those dudes just have fun stories, and this is definitely not lacking in the fun stories, good quotes, some name dropping. Share a little story about Ryan Bingham and my run in there. He grew up in college with Thomas Rhett. Famous country singer as well. So tons of stuff here for you. Before we talk to Danny, got to check in with the Startup Inbox, which is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing with true automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. Here we go. Alan Bevin, office in co-working space. What's the value add in basing my startup's operation out of a co-working space as opposed to private offices or home? Okay, folks, co-working spaces. They're not incubators. Co-working spaces are not incubators. It's Regis with a fancier water fountain. That's what it is. It's like, speaking of Rackhouse Whiskey, it's craft beer and an office space. If you think you're taking space because you're going to invite a big client or customer to come in and they're going to be wowed by your office, they're not, because there's a WeWork at every corner. What you really need to focus on is cheap rent and surrounding yourself with people who could help you. Incubators, people think help, but actually it's like a ton of service providers just selling them shit. What I recommend, and I'll name drop one time here, Al Goldstein, CEO of Avant and Pangea and other stuff, billion-dollar companies. Every single time that he started a new company, which is now three times, he went back and started in the same shitty, dusty office that he started the first one, and no windows, no nothing, rag tags, because he knew he wanted to taste the same desperation that made him work as hard as he did the first time. And he surrounded himself with a great team of people. Now, he had the fortune of money to do that the next two times. He could hire the best people. But ultimately, when you co-work, it's co-inhabitation. It's not about the fancy space and the beer. It's about, are there going to be people who are going to help me along my journey? That's co-working spaces. If you don't have that where you're at, then I think you're just looking for a cheap place to party. On to my interview with the CEO and founder of Rackhouse Whiskey Club, Danny Strable. So did I catch a little bit of a Tennessee twang there? Was that what I heard?
You did. I went to school in Nashville, Tennessee. Sometimes I'm not really sure if it comes out when I'm around other Southern people is what I'm told. But I'm sure definitely not here because there's no Southern people around right now. Chicago.
So like, I spent a lot of time as a kid in New Orleans, and all of a sudden I'll pick up a little bit of that New Orleans. We're talking about that. And you're just like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And it's like, when I hear it, I know... Like, obviously people know accents, but like, I know Southern draw when I hear it. And where are you from originally?
Originally from like the south of Des Moines.
This is the reason it's sort of in the middle is like that Iowa. My family's all from Iowa, so that Iowa meets Tennessee is what I'm living with.
It's like Southern Iowa, so we'll still say Southern Iowa.
I love it.
You bet.
So as we were kind of getting to know each other here, you were telling a story sort of growing up in. Not growing up, but going to school in Nashville, you had kind of a famous roommate and sort of not at the time famous, now famous.
Yeah, he's famous now. Me and shout out to Chad, had a guy named Thomas Rhett. He used to come over to our place and hang out quite a bit, stayed there quite a few nights. And he was a nobody back then. But now it's quite odd to see him be such a big time guy.
Star.
It's still very odd to all of our friends to see you know.
Do you guys still like communicate with him?
Yeah,
I
see him every. I see him. I want to see him here in the next couple months. Actually,
is he still, like normal dude still. Like,
same old guy. You know, my dad. You know, said something to him about 4 or 5 years ago when he was opening for Brantley Gilbert. I think it was, or Jason Aldean, one of the two. And very success. He was already very successful, and he told him. Back when he was hanging out with us a lot and he played every time, you know, being from Iowa, you don't have lots of people who play instruments. And so my parents would always ask if he would play guitar for him because he was good at it and a good singer. And
who's the former quarterback's brother for University of Iowa?
Tucker Beathard.
Beathard, yeah, the Beathards.
There you go.
You have to name like the one. Like,
There's one. There's a couple, but not running. And he would play, and obviously was very talented, and it was just, you knew that he was going to be something someday. And my dad told him, no matter how famous you get, you know, no matter how much you know, attention you get, just please don't ever change who you are.
Yeah.
And you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, and this was long ago when I was in college, 4 or 5 years ago when he opened for Jason Aldean, he said, "Do you remember what I told you back in Danny's room that one day?" And he said, "You told me not to ever change who I was." And I looked over, I'm like, "What? You actually remember that?"
I don't remember anything my dad said. I was like, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. You know, but it just shows you that like he cares about the little things. He's literally the same guy.
It's funny. We're on a totally different topic, but given the fact that this whiskey is the conversation at some point, then I think this is all
we'll
fit.
Get to it.
We'll get to it. But I did an interview, and actually Michael Heideman, our producer, he will remember this because I hijacked his sound sessions. If you remember this, like 4 years ago, if you know Ryan Bingham.
Yeah, I love Bingham. Ryan Bingham, man.
Huge Bingham guy. So
I am too.
I found out about Ryan Bingham at a fair in Dallas, Texas. This is like way before Crazy Heart. This is when he was still with the Wild Horses and he was doing his thing. And I interviewed him shortly after he hit the trifecta, where he was on Crazy Heart. He won, you know, the Grammy, the Oscar, the whole nine.
Yellowstone.
He won everything. And he was coming to Chicago and he was doing I think it was at the Vic. And I randomly sent him a link to Michael Heideman's sound sessions thing and was like, "Oh, I'm at WGN. Granted, I do a tech show. I have nothing to do with this." And I sort of like winged my way into doing a music interview with him. And I show up there, and I don't know if I'm supposed to say this out loud, but I'll say it anyway because it doesn't matter. They were high as shit.
Oh, sure.
And we were having a blast. And I come in there, and we posted this to WGN, so I don't know if they're supposed to know I was high as shit. But like, I walked in there, and they're just like eating, you know, great chips. And I forget the name of the brand of chips, but as soon as I saw them, I was like, "We're people. Like, we're good people because that's my brand of chips." And we sat there, and I'm telling you, this guy was coming off of the biggest. I mean, you can't even imagine the biggest like night of a person's life, right? It was right after the Oscars. And first off, he invites me and a couple of my buddies who were there to see the show. He's like, "Do you need tickets?" I was like, "No, we're already going. We bought them. Like, I don't take free tickets from you." And he's like, "You should come up on our bus afterward and hang out. And, you know, how about, you know, we do an interview, but you know what's more fun? How about I play some songs while we're doing the interview?" And so in the interview, he just cracks out in the middle of it, and he brings in his he had a violinist, and and he brings these guys in, or not a violin, what's the country version?
Fiddle.
Of that? Fiddle. Brings in the fiddle guy, and he just starts going. And I'm sitting there just like, this is like my favorite musician, and he's blowing this thing up. And afterward, I asked him, and I think it's in the interview, but I asked him, I was like, "You come from, you know, New Mexico." It's like, first off, no cowboys come from Texas. Like, it's New Mexico is a real cowboy. He's like, "Oh my God, I can't," you know, he goes through this whole thing. So then he's like, "I'll tell you, the Hollywood people," he's like, "I think if you don't find your center before you go to the big time, you're going to get wrecked." He's like, "The people who, you know, if you're lucky and you're talented and you can last a long time, you can lose yourself and then find your center and come back." Sort of the Robert Downey Jr. kind of thing.
Sure.
But if you go into it already a shallow son of a bitch, you have no chance, because Hollywood is going to throw fake shit at you until you can't even believe it. And he was like, "I drink." He's like, I party. Like, you know, it's a sad story of his parents and how that all went. So it's, you know, not to like make it seem like you're not cool if you don't party. But like, he's like, "I can throw down like with the best of them." And he's like, "I went out in Hollywood for one night." He's like, "I haven't slept yet." It's 3 days later. He's like, these people are just on another level. And he's like, "Stuff is coming at me so fast that I had one little moment where I saw myself doing something and I was like, that isn't you." And it just, I guess when you told me the Thomas Red thing, it reminds me of that. And it goes to the entrepreneurship too. Like, you if you don't see yourself at your worst and see yourself at what you think is your best and figure out which one of the two morph is really you.
Figure out who you are.
You lose your place so
fast.
That's
a great segue, by the way. I think that that's absolutely what happens, because even as an entrepreneur, you get thrown, you got these things thrown at you. Once you start a business, you get people calling you constantly. This is so-and-so bank, you know, or the business loan. And then you get a person emailing you saying, hey, I've got a great bunch of influencers. If you send them a free box and all, we get that
you
stuff.
You go broke in 5 minutes.
Absolutely. You would
get
go
a co-founder.
Broke.
You need to get a co-founder.
We do. Yes.
No, that, you need to get one that's you want to get rid of. You get a co-founder just for rent. You get all of his information. You sign up for all those loans. You take all those free checks. You send out some free shit. You get all kinds of plugs, and then you just make sure it's on that co-founder's address and you kick them out.
Or you have, you know, I'd work with this like kind of startup accelerator. It's very, very small at a university in the town that I live in. And, you know, one of the things that I tell them is sometimes is like, don't listen to your family. Yeah. Like, you know, it's and I mean that in a great way, but it's because mom and dad want you to be successful, but
they don't
also
want to see you hurt. Also.
They don't want to see you hurt, but they just, yeah, there's just, and I'm a parent and I totally would understand it, but there's also this thing too, where is don't listen to really, and you have to, there's like a handful of people that you really should take good advice from. Otherwise, when you're starting something, you're going to say, have you ever done this? What about this? What about that? How about, what if you guys did this? It's, you have to, is there, your filter's got to be strong. And the same thing goes for someone like Ryan Bingham or TR, and all the way down to little old me, that you have to have a good filter in order to take things and take them out, or actually hear something and go, you know what? I have not thought about that before. Maybe we should implement some sort of thing like that.
I think
you know, it's hard to do that though.
I agree. I think I stumbled upon this. I don't know if I made it up or if I heard it and I, where it came from, but a quote that struck me, and this is going back to like college. Don't take advice from people you wouldn't trade places with.
Yeah.
I've used the quote a ton of times. It's probably played out from our standpoint now, but like, I think that people, especially entrepreneurs, but really anyone, when you look like a shining star, people love to give you advice because they're going to direct you in their direction. They're going to direct you in a place where at least the stardust that comes off of you hits them and they can make something out of you. And you know immediately that their intentions are shitty. And it's like that groundedness is one thing, but it's like knowing that I'm confident in what, I don't know everything, but I'm confident in what I think my mission is. And I think I know who I have to be able to accomplish it. I'm going to listen and watch other people fall in the hole before me, and hopefully I can step over them and not fall in it. I'm probably going to fall in a few holes, and I'm going to hope that I learn a lot coming out of it.
Probably, you will.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you don't,
100%.
You're in deep trouble.
You're
like,
insanely lucky, or you're in deep trouble later.
But if you're one of those people who like sits on the edge waiting for someone to tell you what to do next, I just don't think this is a business for you.
Oh, no business will be for you. I mean, it's a cubicle job, and or the military. Yeah. You're very structured, and you need, you know, being told what to do, and that's all. I think, knowing who you are as an individual, it's very difficult to figure that out. I mean, you will, throughout your life, get thrown, you know, stuff tossed at you that you're going to have to make decisions for. And that goes for a business too, especially when you're running one. I mean, you have a lot of people that are looking at you to make, at the end of the day, you know, a bad decision is actually better than no decision at all.
Yeah.
Because you learn something from a bad decision. And the whole point of that is just to make a damn decision.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have struggled with that. You know, they analyze so much, but they can't make it. You got to make a decision. And even if you don't have all the information you need, one of my one of my partners in Rackhouse is a retired Navy SEAL, and I get a lot of life advice from
him. I'm gonna guess his decision making skills are pretty quick.
Yeah, they have to be. You know, at the end of the day, you just got to make one. Sometimes you just can't think about certain things, and those are, you know, stuff like that is what I get out of it. You know, paying attention to the little things in life. You know, the little things in business, whether it be a business relationship. It's, you know, relationships is a huge one.
I get into this all the time with people, and I don't know if there's an answer, but I don't even know where I fall on this. Speaking of decisions. Do you think that that's a trait that, I know it can be taught, trained, honed, but I don't think you can have people who are like strong decision makers. I don't think you can train them.
I think you can. I think you can train them by watching and learning from and being around other great leadership.
So like, here's my thing on this, and we're probably going to be agreeing on the same points and just phrasing it differently. But like, for me, I look at decisions and I think there are so many factors that you're not counting in your decision. Now, I'm not talking about like picking soda, but like even that, like you see those people freeze over it. I just had a meeting before this show and the guy froze over Diet Coke or Pepsi. It was like, I got to tell you, man, I don't want to be in business with somebody who can't decide between Pepsi and Diet Coke. It's an obvious Diet Coke. What are you doing? you might be a Pepsi guy though, because Pepsi is in Iowa's kind of a Pepsi town.
I don't drink pop anymore.
Just whiskey.
Just whiskey. I don't even mix it with my whiskey anymore.
My man. No. So like the point of it is though, I think that like all of your insecurities find their way into decision making. If you have a history of people second guessing you, if you're a person who is very risk averse, if you're a person who usually can't figure things out on the fly, there's so many things that in my mind you can become better at blocking stuff out, and you can become better at like not analysis paralysis, and like there's things you can train by spending time with your co-founder and learning like how a SEAL makes decisions. Like they a great decision maker, he probably was beforehand, and the SEALs made him better. But like, I wonder, by the time we get to our age, is it something that we can go back and rewire you to be like, you know what? I'm going to make a decision right now. I look at the percentages, 19% chance of success. I think that's enough for me. And the worst possible outcome, I think I can get out of, decision made. Or if I'm a person who has sort of baggage and a lack of, risk aversion, and I'm waiting for your approval and just all these things, can I become a flash decision maker? And you need to be that as a CEO.
You do. I mean, that's a great point. I mean, if you fail enough times in a row, it's hard to keep trying at something. You know, you have to start looking within yourself and asking, is there something wrong with me? And I think that everybody will eventually go through that, you know, whether it be with finding a dang
girl. But it's how you hold
on
to it, though.
Yeah, I mean.
You don't hold on to those things. I can say, I mean, also, I know from doing our recon here, you know, obviously you play baseball, and like I find athletes, baseball more than any other sport, because of the batting percentage. Like, you better forget like immediately.
You gotta forget. Well, and as a pitcher in college, you can't like go take more ground balls because you made a bunch of errors, and you can't go hit more in the batting cage because you struck out four times. As a pitcher, you just literally got to get over it. You can't go throw more because your arm's going to fall off. Yep. You got to just get, and it's very hard to do. There might be some of that, and I do see more of that in the athletes and in the military and stuff like that. I don't know what it is, but I think it's honestly from just cutting out a lot of noise helps a lot. Like, there's so much data that we're getting constantly thrown at us every single day. So many things to worry that we think we need to worry about, our phones. Like, headspace is just becoming very limited. And I find that, like, talking to guys like you or with my business partner, you know, Brad, who is in the SEAL teams, or Thomas, or guys who have done successful things or have a outlook on life that, you know, maybe I would like to implement my own, and seeing how they live their life.
Yep.
What's their habits and their stuff like that. I start to kind of like pick up on little things that I think that I would maybe start to implement in myself.
I think that's a life learner. I mean, that's like very clear to be successful. It's just, I don't know. I guess when I look at the whole thing, I just think it's interesting when I see founders from every walk of life and they come in, it's like there's just these common threads.
I think competitiveness is overwhelming thing that you just have, and some people just don't have it. Like, I've read stories of founders who have started very successful businesses and they hated being a CEO. Yep. They don't like it. It's not in their makeup.
Yep.
And that, I respect that, because they know who they are. That's just not, they'd like to be told what to do.
I guess I look at that, and it's kind of a good funny point that you make, that because maybe competitiveness is that, like, that all equalizing thing that you're like, you know what, I'm willing to make all these decisions because I have to, because I got to win. It's like the winning and the competitiveness, succeeding over ranks all the other things that you might, you know, in my personal life, do I act the way I do here, you know, on the show or downtown? No. I mean, when I'm on the golf course, like I played golf, and like for me, when I play against people in golf, like, am I an asshole about it? Yeah. Like, I can't help it. Like, once I'm in, I'm locked in. Here, I'm in, I'm locked in. At home, I'm like easy go. I'm not the leader of the house. I'm not, like, my wife takes care of that. Like, I'm just hanging out. Like, and I don't think I would be necessarily a great decision maker in my household. I mean, I would in the money moment, but like, I don't know if I would be a take charge. And I don't think I am a take charge in the house. But if you put me in this, that's a totally different thing, because now there's stakes.
I think you would be if somebody came into your house, your house was burning down, or something.
Yeah,
of course. But I think
laid out.
I think that our primal parts of our brain don't get pulled out enough.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Fortunately,
which means you don't put yourself in enough situations.
Well, it's I think we just we've built a world around us that is very censored, and very sensitive, which is a good thing. We've built it for that reason. But then I think there's also some things that you can take from individuals. I go back to the SEAL team things. Yep. They've done and seen things that, sometimes you couldn't even imagine. And so like, well, what happens to an individual when they go through that? And how do they,
perspective.
Yeah, and living in some dirt hole places, man. I mean, and people that are super happy. I think it's hard to gain perspectives off of it. You can only do it on experiences or talking to somebody else for a long time, not just one or two times, like learning from them. That has helped me extremely well from learning from other people who have gained perspective on doing sometimes terrible things. Yep. And that's just kind of part of life. It's very messy sometimes, and you kind of get into that primal sense of what you could do. I've been involved in the medical field and have seen some things that were pretty rough. I really did come home and I hugged my kids, and it was different. It just was different.
Yep.
And so like you gain that kind of perspective on things where you're like, it's not really that big of a deal. When things go wrong, but sometimes other people trigger on the littlest things.
I totally agree. It's also like, where can you put yourself? So I guess it sounds to me that you've lived a fairly fascinating life already. I'd love to have you walk us through sort of like your that moment when you're done with school, you're done playing baseball. I don't know if you pursued it further than that or what, where you were like, I want to do something different, and kind of walk me into Rack House and how this thing came.
Yeah, I was devastated when my baseball career was over with. That was my goal, was to go play professionally, and some things just it wasn't supposed to happen. Things didn't fall my way. And, I didn't have a clue what I was going to do, to be honest with you. But I got a degree in science, and I actually went into the medical field working for a nonprofit, organ and tissue donation.
Okay.
And still having no idea what I wanted to do. I want to go to med school, do all these little things. Anyways, after a very long story short, I met a certain individuals that kind of got me kind of interested in certain areas in the media world. So I worked on a little TV show thing that didn't really go anywhere, but I gained a lot of experience on it and met some certain individuals through that, or just networking, really, just doing what we're doing here.
Yeah.
I mean, just talking to people. And we ended up visiting this distillery down in Florida. That was a very small distillery in the middle of nowhere, a place called Weekiwachee, Florida. It's like the home of the mermaid, I guess, and very random. But I saw how they were carrying grain across their field, their land, in a wheelbarrow into this mill and grinding it up on a mill that was powered by a creek next to their house. And before I got there, I tried their whiskey, and I thought, it's just whiskey. It didn't taste any different than any other whiskey I've had in my past, and I thought, but I wasn't in that field.
Yeah.
And after I saw that, after I met the individuals that owned it, after I saw the grain going across in a wheelbarrow in the mill, I tasted it again, and I was just aware of something that I didn't have beforehand. It just tasted better to me. So I asked myself, why in the hell is that? I mean, I don't know why. Nothing's changed. This is the same whiskey. And it was because of the story. I knew more about it at that point in time. I got to experience something and understand something that I didn't understand before. And so I started looking for other, videos, documentaries, images, anything, stories on other distilleries throughout the country. And I couldn't find anything. I looked at the other big distilleries. They do a good job. Wild Turkey has Matthew McConaughey, and he's, the greatest storyteller of all time, it seems like, up
Have
there with the greats.
Have you heard him on Calm?
He's my favorite Calm
What the
guy.
Hell? Like, I was what, like, I mean, I'm called? Just doing this just because it's McConaughey, and I was like, all right, I'll listen along. And then it was like, are you feeling good? Everything's.
It's falling
asleep wonder already. It's like, what this guy?
He's good, man. Yeah, Want Calm is. I listen to that every night. It's a great app. But yes, he does a great job with Wild Turkey. But nobody else was doing that, and so I started to ask more questions. I ask a lot of questions, and that's, I think, another thing going back to what we were talking about previously that people should do more of, is ask questions and listen more instead of talking. You do find out a lot about things. And I found out that, they don't do these sorts of things, these smaller distilleries, because they can't afford it. It's very expensive to hire a marketing company. It's very expensive to run a distillery, to start a distillery, for that matter. I mean, we're talking millions and millions and millions of $1,000 sometimes just to start. That's not even to start selling it. And so there's just not any, you know, left over to spend on marketing for people to buy it. And so I started thinking, well, how can we get that in people's hands? And we've, over a year and a half, I mean, it took a long time. And I was, to be honest with you, I was on my last leg. Otherwise, this whole thing was going to be tossed because I couldn't figure out how to make it work with the laws and distribution and shipping it out. And we finally developed a model and created some amazing partnerships in order to make it happen. So now what we do is we go to these distilleries, we film and tell the stories, we negotiate a bottle price that works for our, you know, within our price range and our model, and that works out for them because, you know, we're giving them some money for their alcohol, and it works out where we can ship it across the country and get it in people's hands that never would have heard the story before. So we tell the story, we get them to hear it, see it, and then ultimately we want them to taste it at the end. And these are distilleries, again, that you, they may only be selling to their city or their state.
Templeton Rye at one point. Before it went.
Yeah, Templeton Rye is a hard example because it's quite big now. Yeah, a billion dollar
company.
I
remember when I first saw that, like the first time I ever had it, and was like, I was definitely not 21.
Yeah,
right. It was like, because like I said, my family's from Northeast Iowa. So we would go all up and down, you know, all these areas, and you'd have, I mean, hooch is really what I would call most of the stuff. And it was just like, we'd sit out there hunting or whatever we're doing, and like someone would pull some shit out of a can, like a tin can that they poured in or whatever. Like, what? This is like very harsh.
Yes.
And then tried Templeton, and I was like, oh my God. I was like hooked immediately. Never saw it again. Went to college, never saw it again. Then I go to like a Binney's one time, and I was like, holy shit, I know these guys.
Yeah.
And now obviously they're huge. I don't even know if it's the same owners anymore.
No, not the same owners. They're like a conglomerate now, or one of the big guys. But yeah, so I mean, and all the smaller distilleries, some of them have aspirations of being that and some of them don't.
Yep.
Some of them, and we love that. That's part of the story. You know, they just want to be able to support their family, support their community and their neighborhood. It's part of the story. Let's go tell. I mean, I don't think people realize like some of these stories that are out there. I mean, there's NASA engineers that are out there making whiskey. You know,
I think
there's
the thing that
it's amazing.
Is interesting. I'm really, what I think is really cool about what you're doing is, and we're going to get into the business part of this because it sounds like another company that I'm not in whiskey.
Yeah.
That I think you should know if you don't know already. But for those that are country music fans and sort of that lifestyle, they probably are aware of this, but the average Joe, I don't think, understands, like, there's not a better alcohol that has history in this country than whiskey.
Absolutely.
The stories, if you were to just follow the stories of whiskey from the start to today in this country, you are part of every major historical event in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. I mean, there's
the characters,
and there still are coming out. I mean, that's what we're trying to pull those out. And I mean, there's a whiskey boom right now, especially in the, you know, quote unquote craft whiskey.
I was gonna
world.
Say that's the new thing is craft
it's
whiskey.
Huge.
Which is
oh, it's
nuts.
It's like the craft beer kind of had its time. It still is, and now the whiskey's having their time, and the laws and legislations.
I say
are
the
slowly
beer is
changing.
For the mustaches, and the whiskey's for the beards.
You bet. I like that. I'm gonna take that back with me.
You're welcome to.
I'm gonna start growing a beard. Then I got rid of it. Actually,
I have like this is as far as I can go, and then it starts to mange, and it's like just and my wife is like no, and then like.
It's getting hot out. Stuff gets in there. You know, it just water just sticks. I had to get rid of it, but I'll
you're
remember that next time.
Take it.
I will.
It's all yours.
But there's still stories that are coming out, and that's what we do. We're going to Portland, Oregon next week to go film at a distillery out there. We just got back from Washington, D.C. We're featuring right now Buckshee Whiskey, and Buckshee Whiskey is it's kind of an English term for the backsheesh, which means to bribe. And the owners of this brand are former special forces for the British Army. He's probably one of the biggest bootleggers in the history that I can think of. He owned a place called Baghdad Country Club. It was in the middle of the war zone in Iraq, and they had no place to get a good drink. And he worked over there as a he was, you know, intelligence and stuff like that. And when he got out of that party, he decided there's no place to get a good drink in Baghdad. So he started the Baghdad Country Club, where, you know, you've got ambassadors and assassins having a drink next to each other. And it ended up getting shut down. But they had to distribute alcohol down this place called the Route Irish, which is only about a 10-mile-long stretch. But it was undoubtedly the most dangerous road in the world at the time. Yeah. I mean, constant sniper attacks, IEDs going.
All
I mean,
for a drink.
And he's getting, you know, a whole entire semi full of millions of dollars worth of alcohol down this road into the Baghdad Country Club. And if at the time the militia were to have caught you, I mean, you're getting killed. I mean, they were killing anybody that had alcohol at the time.
They were killing anybody, period. But if alcohol is definitely
for sure, you're in a big no-no. And he was doing it. I mean, it had a $10 million operation rolling through there. And
was that special forces blood?
It's, I guess so. You know,
those dudes don't give a shit.
Well, you have the right contacts and you have your fixers, is what they call people that are locals that kind of just know how to get shit done. And you don't know how they do it. You don't ask questions,
you don't
but they
know
do
how
it.
They do
and
it.
That's kind of the what, and you know, he's been all over the world. He's, you know, he's kind of a half James Bond, you know, character that has been to the Arctic and Central America and, you know, obviously the Middle East and all. And he, you know, the whole brand behind Bakshi is this storytelling, which is what we love. You know, you enjoy it, sit around a campfire like they used to do in the Middle East and tell you the stories that happened during the day and with your buddies and friends and family. And that's kind of what we're trying to kind of put out there with whiskey. We could give a shit less about tasting notes, to be honest with you. And I'm saying that publicly because I think people get so wrapped up in that.
Most of the people who talk about it don't even know what they're talking about.
They don't. And there's a place for it, so I don't want to talk about it too badly because I have good friends that make videos doing these sorts of things, and that's totally okay. I love that certain people have a palate to do that. But for people who are just getting into it, you know, it really doesn't matter. And the guys that are doing these tasting notes will tell you as well. I mean, you're going to get different notes than I'm going to get. So when I put it on a piece of paper and I rate it, it doesn't matter what I rate it at. You should not have any, it should not have any ranking on whether you try something or not. And I think a lot of other, you know, whiskey companies out there, they really focus on these notes and what kind of things you get out of it.
It's probably because they use that to drive their price up. I mean,
they could, I suppose. And I think after you try enough whiskeys, you do start to pick up on certain stuff like that. But we focus directly on the story. Stories will last forever. You know, I mean, that's just something that you'll remember. So when we do that, we want people to get the box. And then when their friends come over, they can tell their friends all about the whiskey. You know, that's what it's all about. And so we also started a media agency on top of this. You know, there's this craft whiskey boom. We've actually, since this is a tech podcast, we've kind of ventured into the tech world and have collaborated with some very unique tech companies in order to sell whiskey directly online, which has never been able to be done before until now. And so we're helping drive traffic to the first time ever in the history of that whiskey industry.
The bootleggers would be rolling over in their grave.
I suppose so. You know, right? You can go directly to a distillery's website now on, you know, the ones that we're working with and buy from their website. Which beforehand, whiskey distilleries could never, they had really no purpose to have a website, to be honest with you. I mean, you'd go there and you see some nice pictures and maybe a video and
believe
you move
me,
on.
We're making it here, folks.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's about it. You couldn't really maybe buy some t-shirts or something, but really it was driving traffic to the distillery, and that's where, you know, tours were kind of big. But what does it do any good for a Florida distillery from somebody from Seattle? I mean, it's very rare that going out. So it was just hard to have a true online e-commerce business until now. And so we've got some SaaS companies that we're working with to kind of plug and play directly on their websites. And it's another, you know, obviously a model for us to ultimately help distilleries, but then obviously, you know, create a business out of this as well. Which has been very successful so far and that side of things.
I absolutely love this. Are you familiar with a company called Weinster?
Yeah. Yeah. I've, you know, we are mutual connection, Nick.
Scott Washburn.
They've connected us a couple times.
I'd make that intro in a heartbeat because that the story that they've been on several times now, and we've been subscribers of Weinster, and now I suspect a subscriber of you. I won't ask you for free casks. I'll just pay the old fashioned.
You bet.
But he came out and he was like, very similar story. Like, there's all these distilled, you know, wineries that are around and no one knows who they are. And, you know, you can't sell interstate and there's all kinds of problems that go on. And we just figured out a way to basically enable us to get a certain amount of wine and we sell it and they ship it. And as long as we're not touching it and they're not touching the sales, we're good. And you get access to some wines that you would never have. And, you know, I'll say I order the boxes of three. I think I get, you know, they're not all great. One of them, and I don't, by no stretch do I have the palate for anything. I'm about the least cultured person on the planet. I was telling the Fergie out here before the show that it's basically, you know, like dip in a tin can hat, and that's my life, you know?
Sure.
But I think talking to those guys, it was like, I like wine. I like the idea of a small batch. I like the idea of trying things that I can't get in a store and just be like, good or bad, try it. And I'll tell you, there's not a single pack of three that doesn't have one wine that I would totally buy. Like, more.
Yeah. I think what's cool about it is like there's also a trend that people just want to know where their shit's coming from.
Yeah.
They want to know who's making it.
That's a good trend because we've gotten lost in this
world.
You
bet. I mean, what's in it?
To the point of PC and everything. Like, we've gotten...
Yeah, absolutely.
Our shit's a little upside down right now.
Absolutely. I mean, like, I like to know who made it, where it's made, these distilleries are doing a great job saying this, the corn that goes into making this is from Roy Eckelberg from 2 miles down the road. In a small family farm, and they've all got the names and their pictures, and it's cool to know where it's coming from, and who's making it, what facility it's in, and like there's the trend. Whether you're growing spinach or corn or making whiskey, people just want to know where their stuff's coming from for sure.
I think
kind of helps in the wine too.
What I like about where you guys are at with this is the ability for people to buy. So like wines are similar. I don't know if it's the same kind of concept where I don't think you can go on the wine distiller, like the winery. I don't think you can go to the winemaker's website. I think it's Winester sends them to you. You're paying subscription, you get rando, and then you pick the ones you like, and you can buy more of them if you want to. I think the idea that I could go and whiskey's different. It's a wine bottle. I hope you're not drinking whiskey as quickly as you're drinking a wine bottle. I hope it's not.
You could, but
I mean, you could pull a cork and then be done with it in a day, or hopefully have a lot of friends or something. But
yeah.
The idea of collecting 5 or 6 bottles of whiskey that I want to keep on hand while I sample and pull, and then sort of, you know, go or another batch. Is it a little different model?
It is, yeah.
I really like where you guys are at with this, because kind of going back to the comment I made before about the rating card and like Binnie's, I had a conversation. This is just, we're off the fucking rails now, but like,
okay.
I had a conversation with a guy who was the buyer for Binnie's. And I think he's just Midwest, but it was totally random. I just happened to walk into the Binnie's and he was taking stock. And he probably shouldn't have told me this, but we got into this whole Orrin Swift thing and how he sold one of the batches he sold to whatever, some gigantic company, and then he sold the other to Gallo, but they're still Orrin Swift and you buy it and pay $50, but it's like 8 gazillion grapes going through when it used to be like 29,000. And it's not the same wine at all, and it's different people making it. And I was like, kind of blown away by it. Like, I understand economy of scale, but that was like
it definitely happens in the whiskey world,
right? So what I was looking at was, I was like, this isn't like a novel thought. It just hit me right then. I was like, oh my god, now it makes sense. Like cigars, we can do the same thing. The rating card is like, we can either brand ourselves as premium and rare even when we're not, rate ourselves at 96 97 98 and charge the shit out of it, or we can make just as much money rating at 89 and saying it's almost in the 90s, but it's only $29.
You can't beat it.
Or five to shit, five to Fleshman's, it's free.
Yeah.
But like, that's, you know, like, and that's a business marketing move that
it's,
I think,
marketing
is what kills the people you're helping, because they're not savvy like that. They're not, I mean, most of these people, especially small batch, the same thing with the wine guys and cigar makers is another thing. They're proud of what they make.
It's
and
tough.
You're asking them to bullshit the customer, and that's where they lose it.
The thing is, it's set. This is a tough conversation for the whiskey world, because I'm 100% with you, and then I've also been learning as well that there is also an art to blending.
Yeah. Oh.
Even
sure.
Though you didn't make it, you have the certain palate.
I like blends.
Sure.
Both wine
absolutely.
And whiskey.
As long as you're being honest about it,
yep.
You know, like Templeton Rye got in big trouble for that not long ago,
mm-hmm.
And you know, I couldn't even tell you if they're
but
still
doing
that. But
I don't think you'd ever have the original family do that, because there's too much pride.
I suppose, but like, just tell people. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, then all of a sudden, it's like, what else is going on here? People start asking those questions. I don't think people realize like 80% of, I don't know if it's 80, if it's
probably,
people, they'll probably have people talking on the show.
It's probably higher than that, actually, because you're taking, you
there's
know,
lots, the whiskey out there is all made in the same place in Indiana, I mean, MGP, but that doesn't mean that they don't make bad stuff, good stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They make great stuff. When people buy it from them and they blend it together, there is a huge art to that. There are individual human beings who make a great living making blends for people.
Yep.
You know, and it has nothing to even really do with the branding, but that is a huge part.
The fortune for me is I grew up on sangria, so I was mixing shit together from the get go. So to me,
you should go into the blends.
I'll drink anything you put in a glass. Like, I mean, it depends on what time of day.
I will too, actually. I'll try just about. I'm like that.
I will
food
try
too.
Anything. And like you go to a restaurant, I'm snobby in my ways, and I'm not snobby in my ways. I'm like a brand whore in the things that I'm like, for whatever reason, like for me, I just love good design. Like, and it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, a toy or whatever it is. I take art. I get a lot of respect out of people who take art in their craft, and they really get into it. But that said, like when I go into a restaurant, I'm like, which one do you want for your mixed drink? I'm like, who cares? Like, the cheapest shit you got, whatever. And then when you want like a glass, I'm like, whatever they offer, unless they're trying to like gouge, I'm like, I'll try it. Like, why not?
Absolutely.
I just enjoy the idea of like, oh, I don't know where this came from.
Price is starting to become, especially in the whiskey world, and because it just kicks the shit out of wine when you're talking about the premium stuff. Yeah. It's starting to change a little bit. You're starting to see that. Because of technology. I mean, there's a distillery, I don't even know if you call it a distillery, in California that is making synthetic whiskey. They figured out how to make a whiskey taste the same
beyond liquors
as a 60-year-old. Yeah,
beyond,
I mean,
beyond
it's insane, the tech chemistry, and I mean, the technology starting to take place in the whiskey world tremendously. There's people using sound waves, you know, to age stuff faster. I don't know if it really, it's called sonic aging, if it really works or not. But regardless if it does or doesn't work, if it's in the mind of the individual drinking it that something's different there, that's all that matters, or branding, you know. But stuff is certainly starting to change with price. I mean, but I will say at the same time, premium whiskeys are blowing up right now. That's called the single barrel stuff, the select barrels. People can go to a distillery, you can select your own barrel that you taste out of it, and that is yours. It's barrel proofed, which means it's going to be a little bit stronger, and it's not going to be cut at all with anything. And that's expensive stuff. I mean, if you're going to go in there and get it yourself, that stuff is blowing up right now. It is hot as fire right now. It's changing. Things are constantly changing in this world with the whiskey side of things, with price, and people are also buying a lot more cheaper whiskey.
Then you guys are in a really good spot then, because of like the changing tides that I'm watching the market wind. I see it pushing in your direction.
So I hope so. I mean, we're in it for, obviously, we'd love our subscription box to take off. And that's, you know, we more people who the box gets in their hands, more people that learn about these distilleries, the more that it helps them. But we're also even equally in it for the distillery itself, to support them and support the craft whiskey community. It's a very small community, actually. Everyone seems to know each other. If we were to work with the first three or four distilleries last year, and we're just a bunch of cronies, we would have been out of business a long time ago, because in reality, if we don't help the distillery succeed, we run out of business. I mean, it's just if the word will get out that these guys, they're going to tell you that, you know, they're going to get you a bunch of exposure, and you're going to, you know, end up selling.
You won't
some
get anything.
But you're not. Yeah, if that was being done, you know, we'd be out of business a long time ago. But great, we're not. We're actually helping distilleries. That's our whole purpose here, and that's because we actually had distilleries help us build our model. I mean, I don't go out and tell anybody that I'm some connoisseur that's been in this industry for 50 years. And my dad was, my great grandfather was a bootlegger for, you know, Al Capone. That wasn't me. I came looking from the outside, and I reached out to individuals who do know what they're talking about and have done it for a long time, from distributors to distilleries to people who don't even distill but don't run the distillery, the management side. I mean, I was hitting it from all angles. Attorneys.
Yeah.
God bless attorneys.
I was going to say, there is a good buyer for whiskey.
In the alcohol world.
They'll pay just about anything.
You bet. So, I mean, that's how it all got kind of started, was just asking questions and having these individuals who truly care about their industry, who truly care about their art and craft, like you talked about, help. How do we do this?
Yep.
How do we make it successful for you and us as a business? And at the end of the day, if everybody's making money, who really cares? If, you know, then this pie is quite large for everybody. So let's do it all to support everyone another. It's fun because, I mean, when you come out of the door and everyone's happy, that's the whole goal in mind.
So I got to let you go with two final questions. The first one I've got real quick here is, where do people go to sign up for the subscription?
Yeah, go to RackHouseWhiskeyClub.com to sign up for that. That's RackHouseWhiskeyClub. whiskeyclub.com.
Very cool.
And Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, the whole works is there too.
And the final one is, I got a guy sitting here who's self-described as not a connoisseur of this, but what's your favorite big box and what's your favorite little one?
Oh man, that's, you're gonna put me on the spot here.
I was gonna ask you who's like the most well-known baseball player to hit a bomb off you, but I didn't want to go there.
Who is that? Oh god, I don't know. There's quite a few. I mean, any pitcher that you know, can look at themselves in the mirror is going to admit that they've had some bombs hit off of them. You know, a certain name, I don't even know if he's still playing nowadays, but I got a ball hit off me at MTSU that went literally, if anyone listening to this knows, Middle Tennessee State has a baseball stadium, yep, with a football field. Is in left field. I mean, and it is high.
This is for Robert K. Stovall out there who played basketball there.
Oh man, it is way out. It's way up high. I remember walking into the stadium and we would laugh and be like, "I wonder if anybody's actually hit a ball."
And
like,
then he
into
did
the
it
stadium.
On you.
Sure as hell, I got one hit off me, and it went over. It, you lose sight of it in the stadium, and you're waiting for it to hit the metal, and then all, you hear it ding, and it was just, you put the head down and go, yeah, I mean,
tip the cap.
That's a bomb. I mean, everyone pitchers get bombs hit off of them. But I'd say my favorite, you know, small bat, you know, it's, there's all these weird terms, yeah, that go with it, but you know, smaller craft that I've had so far is from Iowa Legendary Rye. It's called a Private Reserve Rye. It retails at about $100 actually, but it's just so smooth. I'm kind of guy that likes a little bit of a bite, but not too much.
Yep.
Something that is not too overwhelming and that you can sip on without even needing ice if you
prefer,
need to.
Yeah, I'm straight. I like it just.
Me too. No, I like ice. A little bit of ice if it's got a harshness to it,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
like
yeah,
a good
yeah.
bourbon. But you know, it depends too on the year. Like in the wintertime, I like something harsh because it feels like it's just harsh outside.
I'm that guy where I start off with a glass and then you put a little bit in it and I take a sip, and if it sucks, I pour Diet Coke in it.
There you go.
And either way, it doesn't matter.
That's right. That's what you should. I'm gonna start doing the same thing.
Oh man, this has been a ton of fun. Yep. Thank you so much for coming in and taking the time.
Man, this has been a great time.
Sweet.
Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks.
That was fun.
Learn more about upcoming TechNori events, investment opportunities. Check out the blog at TechNori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify. Follow us on social at TechNori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.